From the campus of Stanford University, this is Schools In.
They believe that what we're being told is everything they need to know, and they just pay attention to that.
You actually have to teach the teachers how to teach for innovation.
With your hosts, Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford, with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, who is the dean of the Graduate School of Education.
Hello, Denise.
Hi, Dan. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm very excited about today's show. We're going to be talking about math in school. And I thought I would take you back to your childhood and see if you recall some experiences. So close your eyes.
Okay.
And we're moving back in time. We spare no expense at Stanford for the sound effects. Okay, so you're in third grade now.
Okay.
And the teacher has just asked you to go up to the chalkboard, I'm guessing, and solve some problems involving decimals. And the problem's up there. And then he or she just called you forward to do that.
Yeah, see, no. This is very bad, Dan. This is my memory is very, very bad. I'm experiencing sweating and anxiety right now because let me tell you what I remember about math. First of all, it was a long time ago, third grade. But this is what I remember. I remember thinking that I was not good at math and that I wasn't good at math. And here's why. In about third grade, they had these math groups, and we were put in a math group. So you would take like a little test, or I don't even know how they would figure out what group we were in. And then you'd be told you were either in the green group, the yellow group, or the red group.
So basically, you were told you're a winner or a loser.
Right. I mean, like,
given a color to go with it.
They didn't say you're in the dumb group, but pretty much if you were in the red group, you figured out stoplight, this is not good.
Stoplight.
And green is good, right? And I was in the red. I can tell you, honestly, I have this memory. I was always in the red, except for 1 week I was put in the green. And it was like this big thing, and I was all happy. And the next week, right back to the red.
And my guess is the red group got the sort of the worst possible instruction as well.
Well, there wasn't even instruction. I mean, so literally this is what I remember, and I feel bad for my teacher, who's I'm sure not alive anymore. But the whole – this is what I remember. If you were in the red group, you got worksheets with certain problems. And it, we say group like it was group work like today. No. This was just like you sat at that dumb kid table and did those worksheets, literally. And then the green group had their worksheets, and then the yellow group had their worksheets. And she would come around and, like, try to work with us. But it wasn't, like, bad instruction or good instruction. It was very much almost no instruction.
Right. You were told what to do, and you just copied it.
Yeah.
And because you were in the red group, you were told very slowly what to do.
Well, this is the other thing. For me, math was about memorizing. I didn't understand what was going on. I knew just to plug in this formula, and when I got stuff wrong, I had no idea why, because I was just plugging in the formula that I was supposed to plug in, right?
So why do you think you don't generally – so French class, you have to go up and talk in front of the class in French, and you're probably just as sweaty and flub it, but somehow you don't say to yourself, I'm not a French person.
I don't think people get put in the dumb group in language. I could be wrong. I don't know.
I was in the dumb group.
Were you in the dumb group in language?
Dumb group.
Okay. But so this is the problem with this math thing. Here I am. I'm a girl. I'm a female. I'm thinking I'm not good at math. That persisted in middle school. It persisted in high school. The irony is I actually made it to calculus, as if that's like an achievement, right? You make it to calculus. This is what people want you to make it to. I still was just plugging in formulas, not understanding deeply. I still get fearful when I have to use math. I mean, this is crazy, right? I do research, and I still get fearful around the math in my own research lab.
Yeah, it's a funny – you know, this sort of passed me by. Like, I got kicked out of calculus, and it didn't bother me. It never occurred to me that I was a math person, not a math person. I was just a bad student.
Wait, no. Say, hang on a second. I think of you as definitely a math person because you teach the quantitative statistics – in the School of Education, to me, that you have to be a math person.
No, you think of me as a math person because you think I'm a robot.
No. But you to me understand what all the numbers are for, and in my head, and the way I was taught, and the way it's carried with me. Look how long it's carried with me. Right? The red group. I remember the red group. That's not good.
No, that's scarring.
Yeah,
that's scarring.
I'm scarred, Dan.
So I think we need to talk to our guest, Joe Bowler. She is not a therapist, Denise, so you can't.
I may need that.
No, this is not what this is about, but she's going to help us understand the state of math education. So Joe Bowler is a professor of mathematics education at Stanford. She's an author of a best-selling book called Mathematical Mindsets, and she directs U-Cubed, which also has a website. And this is a center at Stanford that provides educational materials to broad audiences for free. This is teachers, students, parents, and they've been downloaded nearly 4 million times.
Wow.
So welcome, Joe. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for inviting me.
So
I was just going to say, these days I am often working as a therapist.
Right, see?
When people share their maths experiences with me. And Denise, you may be pleased to know that you are not alone. Or maybe you're not pleased to know, but
I figured I wasn't alone, but this
so many people are maths traumatized, so many, and more women than men, unfortunately.
So is there one thing we can tell Denise to get rid of this pain? Or
actually, I work with a lot of elementary teachers who are also maths traumatized. And what we do, they come to Stanford, we conduct workshops where we work on maths differently. And we show them a mathematics which is open and visual and creative. And I also share with them the knowledge we have from the brain science that nobody's a math person. Nobody's born with a maths brain. Nobody's born without one. Everybody's brains can grow and change. And those ideas you got when you were young were completely wrong. And regularly, elementary teachers cry in these workshops. It's sort of like crying from relief because they work on these math problems. They come up with amazingly powerful maths, like their own quadratic expressions that they form. And they cry because it's the first time in their lives that they're realizing they can work on really hard, serious mathematics and do it well. And it sort of like sheds these years of trauma that they've grown up with.
So our audience can't see it, but Denise is tearing up at the moment.
I'm just so happy that there's not such a thing as a math person or not a math person, because you really believe it. And I know a lot of kids mm-hmm. believe it too. Even my own kids, they will go to my husband and ask him for help mm-hmm. on the math homework and not me. And you know what? I'm okay. I was like, yeah, I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't help. Mm-hmm. I was. What do you call it? Codependent or something?
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah. So math is so complex. It's not like there's just one muscle in the brain that does math. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's spread all across the brain, and all these mm-hmm. areas are talking.
That's right.
So the idea that you would sort of, my math muscle is weak, is just kind of wrong, mm-hmm. just out of the gate.
Okay, so tell me what you do. Mm-hmm. How do you, when you say visualize and you were helping the teachers?
Mathematics is actually this amazing subject of a few big ideas that are connected to each other, lovely connections. You ask mathematicians about maths, they tell you it's this amazing, connected, beautiful subject. And what's happened in schools is people have taken that lovely set of connections, chopped it up into about 200 pieces, handed it to teachers and said, teach these different methods. That really isn't what mathematics is. So teachers don't see the connections. The students don't see the connections. You can teach maths completely differently as the connected subject it is. And that's what we do with our website. We give a lot of free lessons away that teach maths in a much more creative, visual, connected way. People enjoy it more. They succeed. They do well. But what I find is really necessary is to have two things happen. One is to give people a different maths experience, and the other is to communicate to them that the myths they've grown up with about mathematics are wrong, that there is no such thing as a math person, that math isn't about speed and memorization. It's really important to dispel those myths as well as give people a different experience.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan and Denise, and we are here talking with Joe Bowler about math myths, the myths around math.
So let me follow up on speeded math, because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. people do this a lot. Mm-hmm. And so is the problem with speeded math that it's useless, or is it that it has side effects on other learning that you might care about more?
Wait, and can we just explain for, again, math dummy over here. Speeded math is where you're timed, like you have to do something really quickly.
Denise, 3 times 14.
Right. See, no. See, 3 times 14. No way, Dan. I can't even. My whole brain just shuts off right there.
I see the sweat again.
No, I'm serious. Like, I know. You think I'm not serious, but Joe knows. I am serious. 3 times 14, mm-hmm. my brain goes, nope, mm-hmm. not
anyway,
doing that.
Anyway, so like software math tutorials tend to just be speeded math. Mm-hmm. You do the problems faster, 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 as if 3 times 14 is going to serve you well in life. Mm-hmm. You know. But is the problem with it that it's useless, that I don't really need it, or maybe it's mm-hmm. that once you emphasize the speed, accuracy, you have all these other side effects that spill into the beauty mm-hmm. of math?
Yeah. I mean, one of the myths that's out there is that to be good at math, you have to be fast at math. That is the problem. I mean, it's fine if you're fast at math, but it's also fine if you're not. And some of the world's greatest mathematicians, like Lawrence Schwartz, who won the Fields Medal for mathematics, he wrote an autobiography about how when he was in school, he felt stupid because he was one of the slowest math thinkers. And many mathematicians think slowly and deeply. What we do to children is we make out that to be good at math, you have to be fast, and so the slow, deep thinkers drop out. You can do really well in maths from thinking slowly and deeply all the time. So is it important to think quickly? Probably not, because most of the things people are trained to think quickly with are things that a calculator or a computer can do anyway. The important work, where you have to think and make connections, can't really be done quickly, doesn't need to be done quickly.
So when I hear that, I hear the pushback from people, and they've said this to me, because I used to say, well, why do my kids have to memorize mm-hmm. these timetables? Mm-hmm. They have this thing called fluency. Like, well, right. it wouldn't be good mm-hmm. if you had to take out your calculator every time you mm-hmm. wanted to do yeah. 5 times 6. So what do you say to that?
So math facts. There's a lot of focus on math facts, like times tables, even though they're a tiny part of maths. But anyway, we'll talk about those. And math facts, it is useful to know those. But there are really good ways to know those through thinking about them, visualizing them, drawing, and learning them deeply. And that's what we teach. And what's most valuable is what's called number sense, being able to be flexible with numbers and use them in different ways. So that is really good, really important to have. You don't always need a calculator. But you don't, this is the misconception, you don't have to teach math facts by making kids memorize them and reproduce them at speed. And in fact, what we know now from some of the brain science is that when you process math facts, you actually do it in the working memory section of your brain. And when you feel stressed or anxious, the working memory is impeded and won't work properly. So when we have little children in classrooms and we give them timed tests, we know that that prompts anxiety for many, probably a third to a half of kids. The working memory literally is impeded in those moments. They cannot come up with math facts. And this is the beginning of maths anxiety. And then it snowballs from that point onwards. So we know that time tests are the onset of maths anxiety for many students, yet we continue to use them. We also know that timing students on math facts is not a good way for them to learn math facts. So these are the kind of things that go on in schools that we really need to work to educate people and help them see better ways.
So this is Schools In with Dan and Denise, and I'm so excited that something that Joe Bowler just said is that you do not have to teach math facts through blind memorization.
That's right.
I mm-hmm. think it's huge.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I've seen the residue of this. So I teach the intro PhD statistics course, and I have people who've been out of school a long time, and they come back and they take it. And my favorite story is when a student comes up, and this happens a lot, and he says, is this class like Little League in a posh neighborhood?
And I'm, what?
Yeah, so I was working on this, and I gave up, and I finally said, what do you mean? He said, nobody strikes out because he had so much anxiety about this math. He's really worried about coming in and failing.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. And I teach undergrads at Stanford, and many of them are math traumatized. You might think that's not the case at Stanford, but it is. And I always ask the students, you know, when did this happen? How did this happen? And I can tell you that in almost every case, they will go back to time tests in school.
Yeah.
And for some of the students, they were good at time tests, but at that point, it made them realize or think that math was this subject of shallow, fast recall, so they turned away from maths. Others became anxious with time tests, and so anxiety sets in, you can't do well on them, and that's the beginnings of those feelings that you're just not a math person. Time tests on their own are a huge part of the reason that we have a nation of math traumatized people.
So there was a great study that looked at kindergarten children. I think it was, you'll know this study. It was kindergarten children, particularly girls with female teachers. Mm-hmm. And if the female teachers had math anxiety, it mm-hmm. got communicated to the girls.
That's right. Yeah, I do
from
know that
early.
Study.
Mm-hmm. So how the teacher shows the anxiety in the child, mm-hmm. if I'm a parent mm-hmm. and I'm anxious, it'll get communicated to my
That's
child.
That's right. I mean, and there was also a recent study that showed that the amount of math anxiety the parents have predicts their child's achievement over elementary school grades.
Oh, my God, my poor children. Actually, my kids did pretty well because my husband evened it out.
Yeah.
So there's still hope for my... No, but this is really fascinating.
Yeah, the amount of trauma teachers have. And interestingly, in the teacher study, the amount of trauma teachers had affected the achievement of their girls, not the boys.
Right. So it's social. So, a lot of you pick up anxiety through social model.
Mm-hmm. And you identifying. See, yeah, a lot of the girls are identifying with those teachers.
There's also something about gender and how it's not cool.
Yeah.
As a girl, mm-hmm. to be smart in math and science, you're supposed to be more in the arts and humanities.
That's right, yeah.
So there are still those stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was sitting
with
a fifth grade girl this past weekend, and she said, "Oh yeah, people think that math is for the boys and not for the girls." And she also said, "You know, in our class, the boys finish quicker, so they're all the math people." So I talked to her about how actually it's good to think slowly in math. That's how mathematicians think. But the amount, all of these different ideas, damaging ideas she had already. Actually, she was in fourth grade.
No, they've shown that the stereotype shows up as early as five.
Yeah, that's right.
It's kind of stunning that it gets communicated. Mm-hmm. This is before they've got speeded math. Right? This is even before that. Something in the environment is being communicated about these false stereotypes.
And we also know that mindset is really important. If you believe that you can learn anything, you actually do learn more. And we know it's really important to have a growth mindset and to believe that you can learn things. And mindsets children have by the age of three. Mm. So, you know, parents are communicating fixed ideas about learning to even babies, and those ideas are being picked up.
What does that look like? What's an example that we shouldn't say?
So it turns out one of the damaging things that we shouldn't say and that is said a lot is you're really smart. And when parents say that to kids, you're really smart, you can do this, you're really smart, what the children hear is, oh, good, I'm really smart. But then later when they mess up on something, they think, oh, I'm not so smart. So it's fine to praise kids and to say, you know, it's fantastic you did that and really great that you've learned that or wonderful that you've made that, but not to give that fixed message of you're so smart.
And that's at all ages, from when they're young
that's
all the way up.
All ages,
all the way
yeah.
up. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, so I know we have a lot to cover here, and I'm excited to do a little bit more about what parents should say mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. what parents shouldn't say. And I'd also love a really concrete example of how you teach math the right way.
Sure.
So this is Schools In with Dan and Denise, and we will have more with Joe Bowler about math myths and the right and wrong ways to teach math next on SiriusXM Insight 121.
Students focus on what they were told, not paying attention to the situation.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
So they're not going to see anything new because they're so busy trying to copy what you told them.
From the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are here today talking with Dr. Joe Bowler about the best ways to teach math, the worst ways to teach math, people who are traumatized by math like myself.
So I'd like to pick up on the speeded math because so mm-hmm. many people are fixated on this. Mm-hmm. So I want people to learn math facts. What's the alternative? Mm-hmm. What's an example of an alternative to me just memorizing 3 times 14?
Mm-hmm. Flashcards.
Yeah.
Flashcards. That's, right. I have this memory of flashcards.
Yes. Yeah. So let's not use flashcards. Let's not
Yay.
Have people just blindly memorize math facts. So good ways to learn math facts are to give students number sense, to make it visual is really important. So one way that we teach it is there's a game that we have made with a 10 by 10 grid, and students play with each other and they roll 2 dice. And so they roll a 4 and a 3. They work out what 4 times 3 is, which is 12, but they also draw a 4 by 3 rectangle on their grid. So this is where they get to see that number fact and they see what it looks like. And they can put their rectangle anywhere, and then the other player rolls, and they get numbers, and they draw a rectangle on the grid. And the goal is to fill the grid before the other player fills their grid. And you have to think strategically about where your rectangles grow. So kids love to play this game. Mm-hmm. We released it on our website, and it became so popular. So many teachers were tweeting about it, and the kids were loving it that just blew up.
Tell people how to find your website so they can see this.
So the website is called YouCubed. That's YOUCUBED, YouCubed.org. And it's called that because it's kind of you, but to more powers when you have this knowledge about math.
Very nice.
I like
nice.
It. I like it. YouCubed.org.
So I want to switch a little bit. I haven't figured out when to use the quadratic equation in life. I taught algebra, and I taught this, and probably taught it very badly, and I still don't quite know. But I don't want to know the answer to that specific question. The larger question is, sort of, what is the goal of math instruction for once I leave school? Mm-hmm. Instead of just getting an A on the test, why am I learning math in school?
We teach people mathematics so that they, what's really important is to be able to problem solve with maths and to be able to bring up your maths knowledge and use it to solve complex problems. And quadratics and parabolas, those are kind of important out in the world if you become an engineer or something similar to that. But we do have a pretty antiquated curriculum in school. Like if we actually sat down and said, what mathematics do people need now in the 21st century? I think we'd build a very different curriculum. And the curriculum we have in school was actually built hundreds of years ago to help people work in shops. So it's very arithmetic based. There's a lot of learning methods that you'll probably never, ever use because nowadays we have calculators and very powerful computers. So, I mean, it would be great to really rethink the curriculum and make it a 21st century maths curriculum. I would love to do that. So the goal of school really is not to do well in school, but to develop knowledge that you'll use in life. And unfortunately, you know, we have a nation of math traumatized people who don't use their knowledge in life. And then even those who are very successful are learning an antiquated set of methods that they probably will never use. So there's a few things in there that are very important. Functions are kind of important piece.
Yeah, no, I remember talking to a mathematician and asking, did he use numbers? Mm-hmm. He said, no, I never use numbers. That's not what math is to me.
What does he use?
Joe, help.
What does that mean? Well, I don't use numbers. I'm a mathematician.
A mathematician could be entirely visual and geometric, for one thing. I mean, I was chairing a PhD defense in the math department a couple of years ago, and I didn't see any numbers. It was entirely visual and about ideas. So I remember sitting there that day thinking, I could have brought a 13-year-old in with me to this defense, and I don't think they would recognize what this subject is. It's so different from school math.
So if you're wondering what the subject is, this is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are speaking with Joe Bowler about the best ways to teach math in school.
So point blank, it's been a long time since I took algebra. What's the state of math teaching out there?
It's pretty poor, actually. Algebra in particular is taught really badly in most schools. So we have very high failure rates in algebra classes. Many students repeat and repeat algebra. And it's taught really badly, as I said. It does not take account of the research knowledge we have on how to teach algebra well. So you can teach algebra very conceptually and visually. And we've done that. We brought students into campus and taught them algebra actually for 18 days at Stanford. And they went out and went back to their school tests and improved by an average of 50% after 18 lessons. So, you know, it's not rocket science. We know how to do
it. So how is this possible? Algebra is the gatekeeper to college. Yet it's the thing we teach the worst. Is this to prove that if students survive this, they're college worthy?
And, you know, teaching algebra on its own is an American phenomenon. The other countries don't do that. They teach mathematics as a whole. When I came to the US from England, I was kind of horrified at the idea of doing nothing but algebra for an entire year.
Yes, feel our pain. Exactly.
and then you do nothing but geometry for an entire year,
right.
And then you go back to doing nothing but algebra. So why do we do that is a good question. And other countries do not do that. They teach mathematics as an integrated subject.
Which probably is so much better for kids. I know what's really interesting is one of my kids just did much better in geometry than algebra, and the other was the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a whole year you struggle or a whole year you're feeling good.
Exactly.
And if you mix it up, you have times to do well and times to do well.
It's more like a real maths problem. I mean, when I came to this country and I was looking at problems I knew very well, like problems with trigonometry, for example, I was like, is that in algebra or is that in geometry? I don't even know where you would artificially place things.
Right.
So, and then not to mention all the other parts of math, like probability and statistics. And so, yeah, it's really a nice thing if we teach maths as a subject as a whole.
People are trying hard to, say, teach science and math together or science and reading together. Mm-hmm. Why is it so hard to put them back together? It's the culture. This is what we believe. We grew up in it. We don't realize it's the water we swim in. It could be different.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, people specialize to teach in particular subjects, and they don't know how to integrate those well and to put them together well. So it can be pretty hard to do, although it can also be very powerful when it's done well.
So if you were to give advice to a teacher right now, mm-hmm. teaching math in a way that you know is causing trauma, mm-hmm. what would that advice be to the teacher?
I would say come to our website. we have online courses that teach teachers how to teach well, and we have online courses for students also. So we want to teach math as this connected conceptual subject. And when teachers learn to do that, their job is so much more satisfying. I mean, I have teachers I've worked with who've been made to come to my workshops who are pretty resistant, close to retirement. A few months in, say, okay, I'm not retiring now. I'm staying. This is so much better when we teach in these ways. So it's great for teachers to make that shift, but, you know, they need support from their administrators and other people around them usually to do that.
And what would you say to the parent out there that has a kid who says, I hate math, I'm mm-hmm. not a math person, why do I have to do this? A very common refrain in math class is, when will we ever need to use this again in our lives?
Yeah, that's because of the antiquated math we teach. But yes, so as a parent, I think it's very important to get the message out to your children that there's no such thing as a math person. Anybody can develop the mathematical pathways they need to learn mathematics, and you can do that at any time. And even if you've had bad math experiences, you can change that and be much more positive. But it is a lot to do with believing in yourself and believing that you can learn maths and having people around you that believe in you also.
So you have to be able to fight the stereotypes.
Yeah.
And so what? Give some evidence that helps people fight the stereotypes that Barbie brought forward, which is, I think it was Barbie who said, uh-huh.
Math is hard.
Wait, she said that out loud.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, this was horrible. This was like one of the most hateful things, uh-huh. mistakes ever.
Yeah. But
what's a fact or two that can help people realize these are just stereotypes, mm-hmm. not based in fact?
I mean, I think that we can do what we did, where we brought kids in from pretty disadvantaged backgrounds. And I can tell you, we brought in 81 students to campus, and all 81 of them said, I'm not a math person. They could name the one kid in their class they thought was a math person.
Dan Schwartz.
Dan.
Robot Dan.
And we taught them over these 18 lessons, you know, there's no such thing as a math person. It's great to make mistakes. Those are really good for your brain. It's good to struggle. They completely turned around and they changed their future. So that's possible to do with any students. And we have a little online class that turns students around also. So, you know, never give up hope on kids doing really well in maths, because it can happen at any time with the right information and the right teaching.
Well, you've made me feel so much better today, Joe. Thank you so much for your advice, for helping me get through the trauma, for helping a lot of people, right? Nearly 4 million downloads get through the trauma and learn to teach math better. So we really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So let me see if I can summarize. One, Denise says she is not a math person.
Yeah. But I'm leaning towards maybe I am now because of what Joe said.
Math teaching, when done badly, systematically excludes people.
Yes.
Yes. What counts as useful math is different now than it was before.
Yes.
And then the ways we have available to us to teach math are quite different than what was before.
Yes. And the good news is they are available to people, and anybody can find these good ways to teach math now. And I think they'll find it very enjoyable.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're on the campus of Stanford University and on Sirius XM Insight 121.